Welcome back. It's Marilyn Morning on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're listening to some of the reporting of our year-long series from a couple years ago, The Lines Between Us, looking deep into the roots of inequality in the Baltimore region. We wrapped up the series 2 years ago with a focus on what to do about disparities. Here's Tom Hall.
And welcome back to Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. It's the evening of Thursday, the 26th of September, and we're here in the auditorium of the University of Maryland School of Social Work in downtown Baltimore, where we're bringing you our year-long series, The Lines Between Us, in its final episode. Our theme tonight is, what tools do local, state, and federal government have to dismantle structural inequality? Lisa Gary is Director of System Reform Projects with the Department of Juvenile Services. She has worked for a long time on the issue of racial disparities in contact with the juvenile justice system. And also here is Lisa Williams. She's the Director of the Office of Equity and Cultural Proficiency with the Baltimore County Public Schools. Welcome to you both. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Dr. Williams, let me start with you. Baltimore County's demographics have been changing along race and class lines. Tell us what's going on there.
Back in 1982, we were about 82% white. Today, we're about 46% white. We are now a majority-minority public school district with about 45% African-American students, 5% Asian and Latino. Additionally, we are nearly 50% free and reduced meals, which is the proxy that we use for families that have socioeconomic challenges. We have more students for whom English is not the first language. So naturally, all of those changes really cause us to take pause and look at our practices, policies, and procedures to ensure that what we are doing today really meets the needs of our student and community population.
So you're with the Office of Equity.
Yeah.
So how does race and class play out in the classroom and without intervention from you and the folks in your office? What kind of inequalities tend to result?
Well, culture is to humans as water is for fish, right? We swim in it, right? We swim in our culture, and it's invisible to us, but it's always at play. And so as you think about the idea of race, particularly in this country, as defined by skin color, how people show up in a space, if you think about what economic resources mean in terms of how people live their day-to-day lives, then naturally it follows that our students show up in a racial context. Our teachers show up in a racial context. And whether we have these conversations or not, they're playing out in the teaching and learning process. We can make the same statements about economic resources. We can make the same statements about what we think about folks for whom English is not the first language. What do we attribute to the presence of a heavy Hispanic accent or another variation? And so we need to have conversations about those things so the implicit associations that we sometimes make are not being acted out on in a way that negatively impacts student achievement.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa Gary, there's a federal equality directive regarding juvenile justice. It's called the Disproportionate Minority Contact Standard. Can you explain how that works?
Yes. As a federal standard, any state receiving formula funding for juvenile justice must meet a requirement of not only assessing the rate of disproportionality of youth as they enter the system and progress through various points of contact, but they also must develop a plan. Where the mandate lacks somewhat of a hammer is that states are only required to make an assessment and count disproportionality. There's few penalties for noncompliance, for continued disproportionate representation and the disparate treatment of youth of color that lead to that disproportionate representation.
But does the federal government require states receiving juvenile justice funding to show what they're doing to reduce disparities?
You have to develop a plan, and a plan is as good as what we put on the shelf. I can name a number of assessments that are plans sitting on shelves.
So on our program, The Lines Between Us, we profiled a couple of programs, one that allows kids to remain out of secure lockup as long as they show up at an evening reporting center. There's another one that engages parents who might just let their children remain in lockup, you know, even when they've been cleared to come home. What are some of the other programs that you know that are working?
So the two programs that you just referenced are part of the system reform activities of the Department of Juvenile Services that we do in collaboration with our partners. Other things that we do, I think before answering what other things we do, I think it's important to talk about what needs to happen, because when you talk about structural racism and an ineffective system for children and communities of color, you must also think about the rules by which systems operate. So my primary job within my agency is to change the culture of what we do and the rules by which we do them. That's our policies, our programs, and our procedures.
Yeah, and Lisa Williams, how about with the county school system? Is there a particular program that you think that's been very effective?
I would offer to you that programs, while they may assist a school district in an overall effort, have to be a part of a consistent application of an equity lens, where everything that you're doing, you're asking yourself the question, how is it working for all of our young people? And if it's not giving us access for all students, then what needs to change about it? So we will have schools that offer extended day, schools that will move to, you know, hiring more teachers, so we'll have smaller class sizes. We'll offer incentive pay. All of these technical solutions that, while maybe in part, are part of the solution, must be married to ultimately looking at systemic practice and asking the bottom line question, what are the outcomes? And if the intent is one thing, but the impact is something different, then that's the work. That's the conversation.
Lisa Williams is with the Baltimore County Department of Education. Lisa Gary is with the Department of Juvenile Services. I'm Tom Hall on 88.1. It's The Lines Between Us. We're here at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. Both of you, Lisas, are working within the system. You're positioned, you know, right in the middle of it to root out these practices and policies that perpetuate structural inequality. What are you finding, Lisa Gary? What are you finding as you try to go about making change? Change in any organization meets with resistance.
Change is very difficult. I think the first thing is showing decision makers, because it's not just the staff of our agency. You know, how do we change how we view our use of our most secure resources, and how do we view juvenile delinquency? And not only helping them to understand why some of our decision making to date has not had an effective outcome to change youth behavior, but also giving your staff and creating an environment where you have license to be freer in your decision making, to gear more towards community-based alternatives. Engage the parents. And one of the most difficult tasks for our agency is not only changing the long-standing culture of being punitive, it's also how do we change community culture? Because some communities don't want the youth back in the community. Some parents don't want the kids back in the home, not because they don't love them, but because they have a difficult time trying to access services and programs to address their need. They have run out of solutions. And so our job is to create an environment where we are pushing more kids back to the community where they belong and are better treated and served, and providing an infrastructure of resources in those communities.
And Lisa Williams makes this very important point about viewing this work through the prism, through the lens of equity. Give us an example of what an interaction might be like with a teacher or an administrator. How do they need to adjust as more, you know, low-income and minority students wind up in their classrooms? What kind of work on the ground is your office doing?
So a school will contact my office and say, you know, we really need to look at, let's say, AP participation among our students of color, because they see this pattern where those kids are not represented in the class. And what my office tends to be positioned to do in those places is facilitate the discourse that, for whatever reason, people are uncomfortable with having. I mean, there are certain topics that we don't talk about in American society, right? We don't talk about religion. We don't talk about sexuality. We don't talk about race. And so there's all of this taboo about what happens if I say the word black out loud or white out loud. You don't vaporize, you know? and then in the silence allows a narrative to be created that may or may not be true. So once the conversation opens up, then alternative perspectives can be put on the table, and we can co-create something that works for the school community. But that can't happen in silence. So I would offer that the discourse really gives rise to the kind of climate where you can create more productive processes in a schoolhouse.
Let me ask you one of those difficult questions that this series has been pretty good at asking, and that is, Lisa Gary, we'll start with you. How do you address those folks who contend that the problem isn't structural. It's not baked into the cake. The problem is that these are bad actors. In this case, these are bad kids, and they're just bad kids, and that's all there is to it. There's no problem with the structure.
I tend to use, and as we do in our agency and for the initiatives that I manage, we use data, because in the use of data, once you put that on the table, that is the most objective voice in the table. I am not in the process of believing that if we have this cultural competency conversation or this training, that's going to change everything. Whereas data begins to open people's eyes to what's really happening. If you look at the Maryland Department of Juvenile Services, most of our kids who are in lockup today are for misdemeanor offenses. They are not the most violent felony offenders. So that's one of the first things that we do. Then we also tend to humanize these kids. It's not just a matter of looking at the numbers, but giving them faces, exposing our stakeholders to who the population is, some of the things that they're going through, building in a large system of community supporters who sit at the table with us. That is the most authentic voice to give life and humanity to the kids that we serve. It's very hard to sit at a table and to discredit or to throw away an entire population when you're sitting there with their mothers and their grandmothers and their service providers and their teachers. So I like to load the table personally.
Always a good strategy.
Because it humanizes the discussion. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not fooled. I don't think that we're going to have these conversations one time and all of a sudden we're going to have a kumbaya moment. Mm-hmm. We still must break down the system that allows people's personal filters to operate. That is the job of really breaking down that structural racism within our systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Lisa Williams, you know, you do an intervention and a teacher or administrator says, you know, this kid is just a bad apple. There's nothing you can do with him. Nothing you can do with her. What do you think?
Well, first, the data doesn't suggest that that's true, right? So Lisa Delpit talks about in her book, Multiplication is for White People, which is not a book about multiplication of white people, by the way. But it
Thank
does.
Thank God.
But it does talk about the fact that there is no achievement gap at birth, right? So then the question becomes, what is it that we're doing that ultimately is creating a system that is giving rise to these inequities? And so some of the issues that are raised about what is happening in teaching and learning, about things that children are doing or not doing, that parents are doing or not doing, need to be honored and dealt with. But there are so many examples of our being effective, either within the school district or in the larger community with populations that we want to, you know, just write off, that we come to a place, and it might be painful and it might be hard for us to get there, but we come to a place, to Lisa's point, where the evidence overwhelms the assertion that the problem is the children. But we have to, you know, we have to be bold and honest.
We are out of time, but we are most certainly not out of interest. This conversation will continue online. It will continue throughout our community. Lisa Williams, Lisa Gary, thank you very much.
Lisa Gary is Director of System Reform Projects with the Maryland Department of Juvenile Services. She's worked for a long time on the issue of racial disparities in contact with the juvenile justice system. Lisa Williams is Director of Equity and Cultural Proficiency for the Baltimore County Public Schools. Last fall, she and Kendra Jackson, Chief Academic Officer for the Trenton, New Jersey Public Schools, published a book titled, When Treating All the Kids the Same is the Real Problem, Educational Leadership and the 21st Century Dilemma of Difference. We have a link to information about the book at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. You can catch up on any episode of the series, as well as background and more resources, at linesbetweenus.org, all one word. I'm Sheila Cast. Later in the show, we'll have another story from the Lines Between Us. Stay with us on 88.1.